At Cool Air Products, we developed AC Smart Seal Quick Shot with professionals in mind. It's the only product on the market that's 3-in-1, with sealant, lubricant, and UV dye all in a single application. It's non-toxic, non-flammable, 100% safe to the touch, eco-friendly, and compatible with all refrigerants. It's a safe solution option, backed by years of R&D, Intertech tested, and has sealed millions of leaks. AC Smart Seal, the professional's choice.
What's up, guys? It's been a minute since I got a podcast out. I apologize. It's been super, super busy, especially with the CMPX show that was a couple of weeks ago. I kind of got behind on everything I was doing. But anyway, have you ever heard of the term HVAC as a service? I'm going to talk to Abby Contandemi about this, and he's a research manager at Efficiency Canada. And let me set this up for you. So the basic gist of HVAC as a service is basically handing free equipment to people and basically billing them per BTU or energy usage or something along those lines. And it seems to be something that is eventually going to happen. And I'm weary of it for a few reasons. And I'm going to talk to Abby about that. He's going to give us his thoughts. This conversation sort of morphs into different avenues, and he's got ideas beyond the, you know how we're giving out grants and stuff like that for heat pumps and all that kind of stuff. And it's sort of a rush to the finish line to get these grants in. Well, he's got ideas how we go about, as an industry, making things better in the long term rather than in the short term, in these short spurts for like grants, for instance. So this is a really good conversation, guys. It's sort of a deep dive into many different things. But we're going to start the conversation off with HVAC as a service and get opinions on this. This is the HVAC Know-It-All Podcast. I'm your host, Gary McCready. This podcast is sponsored by Master. They carry Fujitsu, and they carry their own brand, which is MoveAir. I'm installing some trainer units and some customer showcase units, and if you guys are interested in becoming dealers of Fujitsu or MoveAir, check out your local Master. This podcast is sponsored by Cintas. They are providers of the blue-collar uniforms to the blue-collar trades. So spring is here, guys. It's starting to warm up. So if you're interested in looking at some stuff for the spring and summer months, check out cintas.com/HVAC Know-It-All.
Welcome to the HVAC Know-It-All Podcast. Recorded from a basement somewhere in Toronto, Canada. Your host and HVAC tech, Gary McCready, will take you on a deep dive into the industry, discussing all things HVAC. From storytelling to technical discussion. Enjoy the show.
We have this concept that I keep hearing about is HVAC as a service, basically installing free equipment, right? And these are larger sort of corporate type residential companies that have a lot of buying power. They have a lot of they've got the industry by the balls in some markets just because of how big they are. And what I'm hearing is free heat pumps, BTU meter on the equipment, and what we're going to do is start charging customers per BTU. And who knows if that's going to come with free service, free maintenance, like a water heater rental. Like, I rent my water heater, and that comes with free service, that comes with free maintenance. But it comes with free service if it ever breaks down, and it comes with a free replacement if it ever comes to the point where it needs to be replaced. So it's almost like the same concept. And I don't know if customers are going to end up paying 3, 4, 5 times the amount of the actual cost of the equipment over this period of time. I don't know, but I want to get your thoughts on HVAC as a service, because I keep hearing about it more and more.
Yeah, Gary. So I think, just going back to what we were talking about the last time, on one hand, it is actually kind of interesting and somewhat exciting from my perspective to see a new kind of business model come up in this space. So HVAC, for the last, I'll say, 3 or 4 generations, has been sold along similar lines, right? It's sold as a commodity. It's sold as a box. What we've seen happen, and you know this, usually I would say 85%, maybe even 90% of home HVAC replacements happen when the system abruptly one day fails. Is that fair to say?
Yes.
Homeowners are not planning for this. Often happens, your furnace will break during the 2 or 3 coldest months of the year, coldest weeks of the year, or your AC will fail during the 2 or 3 warmest weeks of the year. And when that happens, that ends up being the largest purchasing decision that you haven't budgeted for or accounted for in that year. And you have a cold home or an extremely warm home. Your kids are crying. You're trying to put a call out to get some guys to come look at your system. Everyone's busy. That also coincides with the busiest season for HVAC contractors. And so people are not making a well thought out and a well researched or a well designed purchasing decision at that time. They're making these decisions under duress.
Yeah,
and duress of time and duress of
money. I want to add to that, and so I'm going to take something else that is part of a home in the envelope that people seem to usually get done before it's a major issue, and that is like looking at a roof, for instance. So you can see, most people can see their roof like standing on the sidewalk, like in front of their home. They can see, okay, my shingles are starting to turn up. They're worn. I'm missing a few. Maybe I should get my roof replaced before I have a leak in my house, or before it becomes too much of an issue or too big of an issue. Maybe I should start looking at getting my roof replaced. But with your HVAC system, it's different. Mm-hmm. The average homeowner does not know how to inspect, check, maintain their unit. And a lot of times, because they're busy, they're leading a busy life, they don't have the appropriate people come in and maintain it properly. Right? And yep. When the people come in and maintain it, if you get someone that's trusted, someone that's worthy of holding that license, if you have to hold a license wherever you are, they'll tell you, hey, listen, your furnace, your AC is like 13, 14 years old. This is what I see wrong with it. Next time there's a major repair, we might have to look at replacing it. But before there's a major breakdown, here are some options you have to look at. Here's what it costs you. And then they have this in front of them so they can pre-plan. But not having somebody come in and do this for you, and then it just breaks down suddenly. Like you said, coldest day, hottest day. It's your kid's birthday party the next day, and they're calling someone, oh, can you make it run for my kid's birthday party? Well, at that point, the onus is on them because they haven't done anything about it. And you cannot project that sort of, if there's any customers out there listening, you cannot project that lack of maintenance. You cannot project the lack of planning onto your technician that comes out. It's not their fault that you have not planned for the future, right? I just wanted to throw that in there, because when you look at a roof, you can see it. You can see how it's degrading through time, but you can't see that with your HVAC system unless you have someone come in and look at it.
You're absolutely right. And I'll actually add to that and go a step further and say, with other kind of, Canadians, you and I both live in Canada, Canadians invest somewhere around $80 billion every year in their homes. And a lot of them are lifestyle upgrades, aesthetic upgrades, new kitchen countertops, new tiles in the bathroom, new roofs. Those things have both, so like you were saying, you can see them and you can see them degrade. But further to that, you also kind of know, if and when you choose to sell the house, how much of that cost you can recover in the value of what you invest in, right? I know that if I spent $5,000 in putting new paint, that I can, it bumps up my home valuation by 3 or 5%. Like, these are established benchmarks. There are entire shows on TV, property builders, AGTV, that talk about how to improve comfort and the value of your home by making these upgrades, roof upgrades, things like that. HVAC, on the other hand, is just a box that lives in your basement that you rarely visit. Mm-hmm. And even when you're buying a home, you're looking at kitchen countertops, you're looking at the potential of the home, of what the home can do to fit the lifestyle that you and your family want. Whereas the HVAC in your home is just a checkbox. Does it work? or doesn't it work? And I think most homeowners don't know the full extent of comfort, convenience problems that can be attributed to a faulty HVAC or that can be solved by right-sizing an HVAC system, getting an HVAC system that is designed to meet the latent heating and latent cooling loads of your homes. HVAC is literally a black box for a lot of homeowners. And so to go further to what you were saying, Gary, what happens is when you're in that moment, right, 90% of homeowners, if they're replacing their system under the duress of a no heat or a no cooling call, they're already aggrieved. This actually happened to me yesterday. I'm traveling right now. I'm in Calgary. I went to go pick up some takeout I'm in a hotel right now, grab some takeout. And I was talking to the owner of the establishment, and he was saying that his furnace in his home stopped working, and he's lived there for 17 years, and he's never replaced it. He's never done any maintenance on it. And he was upset that no contractors would come out within like 3 hours of him calling. And it's snowing right now in Calgary for folks who don't believe it. And it's like, you know, first week of April.
Oh, snowing. And snowing, so he was like, it was snowing here yesterday and today too, this morning already.
Yeah, exactly. And so he was upset that he was saying, I called 10 or 12 places and no one's returning my calls. They're saying, we'll come back in a couple of days. Maybe we can bring you some space heaters, but like, we just don't have the capacity to deal. And so already this relationship, right, between the contractor and the homeowner, from the homeowner's perspective, is beginning on a confrontational front. Like they're already, you know, agreed with the contractor. They're an upset for what I think, in my view, and to what you're saying, is perhaps largely, to some degree, on the homeowner for never really doing any maintenance, any system upgrades, and then it inevitably failed this one. After like a week of warm temperatures, suddenly it's snowing and below zero, you turn on your furnace, and then it's not surprising to me. I think that it failed. So on one hand, to go back to your question, because the prevailing dynamics in the space are that homeowners, by and large, don't know the value that HVAC gives to them. And when they make a purchasing decision, they're making it under duress. And the fact that this is the kind of like business models, like it's just like seasonal business models in the HVAC industry, right? Like boom and bust, peak seasons during the warmest months of the weeks of the year and the warmest, coldest months of the year. And then just like shoulder seasons, no one's really, you know, doing much. And so those are the prevailing dynamics in the residential HVAC industry in LSA. And I think it goes back to like three generations. I know some companies are trying to do like maintenance plans and stuff like that. And we can talk about that. But by and large, most HVAC system replacements happen under these conditions. So given that this is the nature of the industry, it is actually kind of interesting to me that a new business model has come up. And I think the analogy that I think, and maybe this is the closest analogy I can come to, is that like it's like you're leasing a car. Rather than financing a car. So to some degree, you're sharing the risk of the system failing with the company. And so, you know, for a lot of people, homeowners, the nature of homeownership is changing very rapidly in Canada and in the US. Not a lot of people live in forever homes, and maybe they don't have the planning horizon to plan for a HVAC system for the next 15, 20 years. Maybe people move a lot. People, you know, buy a home, an entry-level home, which in Canada is increasingly out of reach for a lot of people. And they buy the cheapest home that they can buy and then stay there for a few years and then maybe look to move up as they start to grow a family. And so with all these things happening in the space, I can see why a business model like HVAC as a service is appealing to some homeowners, because they don't have to make a huge upfront capital investment. They don't have to worry about whether the system will work or not. I can see how homeowners feel like they are sharing sharing the risk of system failures, risk of maintenance, stuff like that with the company, and they're just paying for the service. So it's like, I don't want to buy a new car. I will just rent a car when I need to, or I'll just lease a car when I have to. So I can see why it's appealing.
Yeah.
But like you...
I get it. And this is what I want to add to that. So...
If you guys are in the U.S. and you're looking to order tools and supplies for your business and your jobs, check out supplyhouse.com. They got fulfillment centers all across the U.S. and you can order straight to the job site, straight to the office, straight to your home even, the parts and the tools that you need. So check out supplyhouse.com.
So I fully understand the concept behind it, and it gives somebody that might not have, like you said, the upfront capital to spend on a brand new system. And it gives them the comfort of knowing, hey, they'll get this system in and then they can make affordable monthly payments or biweekly payments and keep their family comfortable in their home, cool, warm, whatever it may be. I totally get the concept. What I'm seeing, what I'm hearing, and what I don't like are these things that I'm going to present to you right now. One is that it seems like this is the first option from a lot of customers that I've spoken to, that I've gone and been like their second opinion, their second quote, or whatever it is. It seems like it's the first option. It's like, hey, we got this program, get sign here and you know what I mean? Rent it. You don't need to pay the upfront cost. It's not fair to give that type of option only to homeowners, because what if they do have the money? What if they don't want to rent it? But you're a good salesman, you twist arms and you get them locked into this contract that they look at a couple of years later and go, wait a minute, I should have just paid for this thing up front and that option wasn't given to me. Right? So that's shady business practice as far as I'm concerned. It should be, you can buy it outright for this much, you can rent it for this much, you can lease it or HVAC as a service for this. The all options should be presented. Okay. The other problem that I'm seeing is that the corporations, the larger companies that want to facilitate this type of service, they are subbing a lot of the work out because they don't have the power within. They don't have the resources within to accommodate all of these installations and service and all that. So they're starting to sub it out. And I know people that are subs for some of these companies, and what they get paid per install is literally peanuts. And you have to you have to get there and get out and maybe even do two a day in order to make yourself profitable as a subcontractor. So what that's doing is it's forcing corners being cut. It's forcing methods that you should be doing properly, like nitrogen brazing, pulling a vacuum properly, all of that stuff. It's forcing that stuff to be done quickly, cutting corners, not taking your time, not paying attention to detail. And it's creating all kinds of issues. Now, I have this one guy on Instagram that keeps messaging me. He's a homeowner and sorry, I'm just going to bring it back up here for a minute. I'm not going to name names or name companies or anything like that, but he sent me a picture and I don't know if this is a subcontractor. I don't know if this is coming directly from the contractor. I have no idea, but he sent me a picture of an install of a heat pump with an air handler. It looks horrible. The actual install looks horrible. He sends me a picture of oil leaking from one of the flare fittings. So he had them come back. He said they fixed the ductwork that was all wonky. And instead of recovering the refrigerant, taking the flare apart, looking at it, inspecting it, maybe redoing the flare, what they did is they tried to tighten the flare and then they buckled the whole entire fitting. So now it's sitting on an angle, which is really, really odd. The outdoor unit is mounted on the bracket. The feet are not centered. They're like overhanging on the one side. They've got self-drilling screws holding the thing in place rather than proper nuts and bolts holding it together. It just looks horrible. And this is what worries me about sending subcontractors out, paying them basically lower or not what they're worth, and expecting the result to look and perform like they were given the amount of time and the right amount of money and resources, assets, whatever, to get it done properly. I'm worried that the industry will start heading in this direction, right? So give me your thoughts on that, man, because this is a big problem, I think.
Yeah, man, you hit the, I agree with both of those points you brought up. And it is a serious concern in the industry. And I'll tell you why. On the first point, I am a huge proponent of consumer choice and as are you. And you're right, especially when homeowners are feeling vulnerable, like they're feeling the pinch at a moment where they are under duress of a no heat or no cooling call. A lot of the sales tactics in the industry right now, from what I have observed and have noticed, and I've gone on right along with contractors all across the country and in the U.S. And what I notice is that a lot of what passes for a sales process in the industry is just like a strong arming sales technique. Like they could be selling plumbing for all it mattered, right? It is not really, it's not a sales process through which you and the homeowner are embarking on a journey of like discovering value. The homeowner wants, what do you want? What was your priority? Here are a couple of different options. Here are the range of problems that we can solve in your home. Or do you want just something super quick? You have a 4-ton system. Do you want another newer 4-ton system? Let's get that done. There isn't really a journey of discovery like that. Oftentimes what happens is that the salesperson is just looking to clear inventory, get the cheapest, quickest install in, get in, put something in, upsell, get out. And those dynamics are further deepened and worsened when you have a extremely large company that is able to kind of swoop in to one area when homeowners are vulnerable and essentially put them on a payment plan without exploring options with them, not just on payment, but like, okay, do we want to explore undersizing the system? You bought this home so many years ago. Maybe you did insulation upgrades since then. Maybe you don't need a 4-ton system. Maybe you can get away with a 2.5-ton system. Designing something, exploring different options for them, squeezing them out, I think, is going to, A, first of all, lead to bad outcomes for the homeowners. And like the guy that has been messaging you, he is going to be unhappy with HVAC contractors in general, and maybe like, you know, heat pumps in particular or furnaces in particular. And it's just going to bring down consumer confidence in the industry.
Yeah.
That's one thing. Yeah. On the business end of it, you know, we've seen this happen in many, many times all over in other industries, like let's say solar panels. Used to be, you know, Gary, 10 years ago, if someone knocked on your door and they said they were selling solar panels, chances are that they were actually selling you a solar panel and that you had to pay for. If someone is knocking on your door today and telling you that they're selling you solar panels, 9 times out of 10, what they're selling you is a loan, a financial product, right? They're like, oh, you just sign the dotted line here. You don't have to pay anything up front. We'll just put the solar on the roof and you'll just get blah, blah, blah. And this is how much you will save in X years, 9 years, and this, and that. And what we've seen in the early days of the solar industry, and actually a lot of it in California and things like that, when it was easier to sell them through what they call like a PACE loans, like property assessed clean energy financing loans, where you pay off the system on your property taxes and stuff like that. It is a complex financial product. And what we end up seeing is without adequate consumer protections, like people are just locked into these long-term contracts that they don't know what they're signing up for. They aren't given options on what to do. And it just, for some people, and perhaps for a vast majority of people, it locks them into something that's unsustainable. And over the course of the lifetime of the system, they probably end up paying a lot more than they would have if they just were able to pay for it up front. And, you know, maybe you're buying a home not knowing that this is, you're locked into the contract with locked into like a leasing contract on your water heater or on your furnace for the next 10 or 15 years. I've talked to a lot of homeowners who are surprised, and they find it really difficult sometimes to get out of these contracts. And so what that does is that it just like already homeowners, from my experience, having gone on right along with contractors, treat contractors very poorly in my experience. There's a lack of trust. They feel like contractors are always trying to upsell them. So they always look for the 3 cheapest quotes and this could just go with someone who's able to do the quickest install at the cheapest quote. There really isn't no kind of like value discovery process. There really is no sales process. And so what this has ended up doing, not only is it hurting homeowners. It's creating negative outcomes for them, but it's also like the industry is competing on price and not on offering value. So we're all just like racing to the bottom.
Yeah.
But everyone loses, right? And then when you get these like large companies that have vast resources, who end up buying out. So in Canada, and I believe this is similar in the US, 3 out of 4 HVAC companies are what I'll say like small business leaders with, 5 employees, including the owner, right? 75% of them are small businesses and they are leaders in their community. They've been serving their friends and neighbors and families in their community for like 3, maybe even 4 generations sometimes. And because these companies are competing, racing to the bottom on price that is being offered by some of these larger companies that can do some of the HR, do some of the admin, do some of the, marketing and payroll and stuff at scale, and they're able to like squeeze efficiencies out of the system, and they're upselling people, and some of them may even have like questionable business practices, like you were saying, right? Like upselling people on things that they probably don't need. A lot of these small business owners across Canada, I think, are kind of like being eaten up by some of these business practices. And I think that is a net loss for Canada. It's net loss for the US.
So Rector Seal has this really cool kit. It's called the RSH50 VRM DC kit. What it is a box. And in the box is a disconnect switch, over under voltage monitor, and surge protection. So you would take this kit and put it in place of your outdoor disconnect, and it's going to protect the appliance, the circuitry on it, like your inverter boards, your delicate circuit boards, from surges and from over under voltages, because we all know those things, or we should all know by now, that those things are board killers, compressor killers, motor killers. So check that out, guys. It's called the RSH50 VRM DC kit by Rector Seal.
Because I think small businesses offer a lot of value to our country, and it's a pathway to middle-class wealth creation for people who choose, for a combination of reasons, not to go to college, not to go to university. And it is a way for you to stay connected with your family and your heritage and your history of being a third generation, fourth generation HVAC installer. Those things mean a lot. And those business models where someone you know from your community comes to your home and looks at your system and says, you know what, just keep an eye on this for the next couple of years. And, maybe I can come tune it for now for this year, we can get by this winter, but you really should be looking into it for the next winter.
Yeah. And
not to say that only small businesses do this, but those things matter.
Yeah.
Right?
Those things do matter, mm-hmm. because the smaller businesses, they have, to me, they got better customer service right off the hop, because they actually care about each and every job that they're doing, rather than just creating. It's just a number for some of the larger companies. And I want to take this conversation for 1 minute to side jobs, because a lot of people get their start with their own business doing side jobs, and I totally understand, because I've done side jobs. I totally understand it. But what I'm seeing is, I spent a good portion of the summer when I started my business, McCready HVAC, the first summer, going to homes where someone had come in, installed it on the side, and just did the absolute poorest job that you could imagine. And not only is the job poor, but they charged the customer dirt cheap prices to get it in. One guy said, how much did you pay for this install of this brand new AC? And he said $2,500, and it blew my mind. I'm like, $2,500? I said, right. So that, and then I think I got online and I started I went on a rant. I put those two words together, ream. It was a meme or a rant, or it was both. And I'm like, this is ridiculous. And people are chiming back, well, maybe they can operate at a lower, because they don't have so much overhead, they can operate and charge cheaper. But here's the thing when you do that. Yeah. Here's the thing when you do that. You are taking a whole industry and bringing it down, the whole industry. If you're going to do a side job, Why wouldn't you come in at a price that brings our raises our industry up? Because if that guy comes in at $2,500, right? And and buddy gets on the phone and he calls his electrician buddy and he goes, oh yeah, I know a guy that does, and he'll do it for $2,400. You know what I mean? Then we start exactly. undercutting ourselves. Why are we doing this to ourselves? We undercut ourselves, we undercut our industry. And because we're making $2,500 and because it's a side job, because the guy's doing it in his boss's truck, using his, who knows if he has his boss's permission? I don't know this. I don't know if he has his boss's permission to use the vehicle, the gas, the Silfos, the tools, the nitrogen. I don't know if he does. If he does, that's fine. Mm-hmm. Totally fine. Mm-hmm. Your boss is letting you do it. Go ahead. But do a good job. Okay. And if you're going to do it, support the work that you did. The reason I was there is because he couldn't get a hold of the guy that put it in. Right. And I found all kinds of problems. So he gave the taillight warranty. He basically drove away.
The taillight warranty.
See you later. So let's stop undercutting ourselves and taking this industry and making our customers think that we're used car salesmen. And all we're going to do is throw a box in and leave and never come back. It's such a negative way to portray ourselves in this industry. And like I said, if you want to do side jobs and you have, and you're going to do them out of your boss's vehicle, get permission from him. A lot of bosses don't really care. Some do, but get permission from him. If he says no, then get your own tools and do it on the side. When you pull in, go out in your own vehicle and throw your own tools in the truck and do it that way and take ownership of what you're doing from the install process and the support process if something happens down the line. Otherwise, all we're doing is creating a bad reputation for ourselves in the industry. Do you have any thoughts on that, Abby?
Man, that is such a really fantastic thing to bring up. And I'll tell you why, because, you know, what is happening, right? Because I'll put some of this, actually a lot of this responsibility on the shoulders of homeowners, some homeowners, not all of them, some homeowners, they'll do exactly that. They'll just find the cheapest quote from a guy like a one truck chuck with a taillight warranty. And they'll use that to call around and said, well, I have my cheapest quote here, says $2,500. Why don't you come do it for, and then homeowners are driving some of this too, right? So I'll place some of that responsibility on the homeowners as well. Granted, they don't. If I was a stuffy economist, I would call this information asymmetry in that like homeowners don't know technical details of HVAC system. They can't distinguish a good quality install from a bad quality install. So the only thing that's in front of them that they have any decision making capacity on is the price. And so that's why they jump. That's the only thing they can sink their teeth into. They don't know, like a good a good install from a bad install. And so what that ends up doing, and one part of it is exacerbated by one truck chucks doing side jobs. Another part that makes this worse is like programs, right? Government programs, incentive programs. That are giving homeowners $5,000. We just had a program in Canada that ended that gave homeowners up to $5,000 rebates on installing heat pumps and stuff like that. And so what you're doing is you're telling everybody the only thing that is of value in this transaction is the price. You're telling the homeowners that, you're telling the industry that. And is it any surprise to us that everyone is undercutting each other and competing on price and not on offering value? And so I think we in Canada and in the US, we expect so much from the HVAC industry, right? We want our HVAC industry to be a place for good jobs and a place of skilled trades. We want the people in the HVAC industry to achieve a degree of mastery. It's a craftsmanship, right? Like woodworking, like good electrical work, HVAC work, is a skill trade that where you can achieve some kind of mastery and craftsmanship. We expect HVAC industry to be able to support our all these climate goals, energy goals, net zero goals, energy efficiency goals. We expect HVAC industry to support homes that are healthy and reduce like indoor air quality problems and not lead to situations where there's condensation and mold and stuff in their walls. There's so much that's expected of an industry where the prevailing dynamics are we end up like eating each other out and competing with each other. And we have these large companies that are now swooping in and eating up these small businesses where, due to reasons that we just discussed, and they end up being one of the few places where you have some, where people take some pride in their work because their family name is associated with the business. People have a little bit more of a, you know, like a positive business practices because they care about legacy. They care about continuing the legacy of their parents. And I think last time we talked, we told the story about one of our friends, Gary, who lives in Winnipeg, where he, I went on a ride along with him, and he talked about going to an oil furnace, and the service logs that is, you know, posted on the equipment, right? His granddad's name's on there.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
His dad's name's on there. Now his name's on there. Right, those things are like, and small businesses in every community across our large and beautiful countries are holding up, I think, what I would view as some of the positive aspects in this industry. And this undercutting by one truck chucks doing side jobs, these government programs that are giving people incentives are just like adding fuel to what is an increasingly kind of like race to the bottom in the industry. Now, the question then is, like, what do we do to change some of these prevailing dynamics, right? So what do we do so that the business models in the industry are not just like racing to the bottom, but are also unlocking more value for both the homeowner and the contractor? So the homeowners, so that they can realize that there's actually a whole range of like comfort problems and convenience problems that they can solve in their homes by right-sizing equipment, by slowing the process down, by being a little more proactive about planning for system upgrades, and for contractors to develop like business models that are a little bit more kind of consultative, where like they're offering people advice. So would you say, you know, when you go on these calls, how many homeowners are actually asking you for advice, and how many of them are just telling you what they want?
It's really funny because I get really frustrated with some customers, and I, my aggravation is probably, they probably feel it because my tone of voice will change because I am not one of those, the customer is always right and yes, ma'am, yes, sir. I am not like that. If so, for instance, I've had people call me and go, okay, and this guy never called me back and I don't, it doesn't matter to me because I'm not having arguments with customers over things like this. One guy calls me and he says, yeah, my daughter needs a ductless split system in her hair salon. The last guy that came in said she needs a 2-ton. And I'm like, okay, how does he know she needs a 2-ton? He's like, well, he came in and looked around and said, you need a 2-ton. And I said, well, just so you know, sir, I said, that is not the way we size equipment. We don't size equipment by standing in the space and looking around and using the square footage of the space to size right. it. I said, is there big windows? He's like, yep. I said, does the sun shine in? He's like, yep. I said, so what happens when the big windows and the sun is shining in and that 2-ton is not keeping up and you pay me to install it? I said, now it's my fault, even though you told me. And now I'm back there trying to figure out what's wrong and spending my time and my resources trying to fix this problem that I didn't create. And I kind of laid into him a little bit, you know what I mean? And I, just because I'm so passionate about doing things correctly, and he was not about it. He was not about getting a load calculation done. He was not about doing everything correctly. He said, yeah, that was the other thing. He's like, oh yeah, we need to install it on the roof. And I said, okay, that's fine. I said, so we need to get a crane in. He's like, oh, we need to get a crane. I said, well, how is it getting to the roof? Right. So I mean, these are the customers that I really don't want to have anything to do with, because I know from my experience, when a customer wants to go on that side of things, they don't plan ahead. They don't think everything's just a box to them that gets sold. And now it's supposed to work for a lifetime. People like that, I don't want to do work for. Right. I've realized that because I've met customers that are all about getting a load calculation done so we size it properly. They're all about aesthetics. Mm-hmm. Make it look neat. Take the extra time if you need to. I'm okay with paying you more than the guy that quoted me 20% less than you if you make this job look neat. It's at the side of my house. People are walking by. They're going to see it, right? I'm all about that type of customer. Now, I'm not about getting a service call at 4 p.m. and then the next day I got to change the box out to whatever the box currently was. That's not the space that I'm in. And I get really aggravated at customers that want me to do this. And I'm not rude and I'm not disrespectful, but I get passionate about it. And I think that might come through to them as maybe, oh, whoa, what's this guy on about? Like, I don't need this in my day. I just want a 2-ton box installed and I want it to work. Well, unfortunately, it doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way. And if you're going to do it right, there's certain ways to do things. So Nate Adams, who I've had on the podcast before, had a business model. Yep. At a business, HVAC 2.0, and it was to train contractors on how to go through a proper sales process to show customers and educate customers on the way things should be done. And he just backed away from that because he got burned out. And this is public information. Like he stepped away because he was, I think he just got tired of people not adapting to this way of doing things. Now, that's because probably he's out there doing it on his own. So if we can create numerous amounts of people to get involved in this, it's like I was thinking about it the other day. So I was listening to a podcast and how 50 years ago, or even when I was in high school, the amount of people that smoked like outside, like, but now when I drop my son off at high school, there's like nobody's smoking anymore. It's very strange. Like some people might have the vapes and stuff that they're using now. But there, you don't see anybody smoking cigarettes. And that took decades of education, like smoking is bad for you, before we seen this happen. So this is not going to happen overnight. It could take 2, 3, 4 decades to get the right people into place and start educating business owners and people in the industry on how to do things properly, start charging correctly for your knowledge, start charging correctly for the time it takes you to do these things. And then maybe we might get somewhere, but we can't have one or two people going around the world, North America, trying to preach this without other people sort of in their corner or doing it on their own as well. And you know what I mean? So, and you've got some thoughts and some ideas on how to do this.
Yeah. It wasn't even 20 years ago, Gary. I went to school in Michigan before I moved to Canada. And in my time in Michigan, this was like 2010, 2011, you could still smoke indoors in some restaurants. And there would be like smoking sections in a restaurant. And I remember like people eating bread and eggs and smoking while they're eating, right? It seems, even now to me, it seems so absurd that like it seems like something out of the 50s or the 40s. Yeah,
my mother-in-law told me like when my wife was born, the doctor was smoking in the hospital, like in the room. You know what I mean? It was just normal.
Right. Yeah. You get on an airplane today and there's still the no smoking sign goes up, right? Yeah. on the airplane. So they used to smoke. Yeah. And so, but things change, you know, there's years when nothing happens and weeks when things change. And when things change, they change quickly. Some of it is because of, business practices changing. So like with what you were saying with Nate, with HVAC 2.0, just to expand on that a little bit, my understanding of it is, and Nate is a good friend of mine, and I went on a couple of ride-alongs with him and a couple of the other HVAC 2.0 guys in the U.S. Last year, almost same time last year. And what their thing is that, like, you know, contractors are often in a really difficult position, right? Because you have to both educate the consumer and you also have to not give away your knowledge for free, because homeowners are sneaky that way. They try to get the free consulting out of you.
Oh yeah, and then use it with somebody else. Yep.
Exactly, use it with someone else who can, you know, bring it in for a little cheaper than you. So how do you do that? And then in the case of like the gentleman that you were talking about, and if he said, I want a 2-ton system, and if you went, okay, I'll give you a quote for a 2-ton system, you put it up on the roof. If it doesn't, people like him will expect the new system to magically solve all the problems that existed with the previous system.
Correct.
They just think, oh, I got a newer system, but my salon is still not warm enough, and they'll blame you. They'll leave you a negative review. And so it's like, how do you deal with homeowners like this by not giving away your knowledge for free, by walking them through a process where you're also kind of protecting your own kind of business integrity and your company against vindictive customers like this.
Yeah, and,
right?
and I don't know if it would be, there's laws against price fixing, I believe, where you can't, if there's 20 contractors in the area, okay, so our minimum price, guys, for this install is $5,000. We're not going under that, right? That's, I don't think that's legal, but I mean, is it, I'm wondering if it's, if every local business was on board, hey, we're not going to give free quotes anymore. Hey guys, like, let's get on board with this. We're not going to go to a homeowner's residence or even a commercial setting and give out free quotes anymore. And if everybody got on board, yeah, quotes have like a, maybe it's like an all in fee type thing where it's like, okay, we'll give you $100. We'll visit your, or it's an hourly basis. I don't know, but I mean, these free quotes, it would stop homeowners from trying to get 4 or 5 quotes. And I know it's good for people to get quotes and meet new people and see, because when I got my basement renovated in my last place, I had 3 people come over. They all gave me free quotes. And it wasn't until the last guy came that I'm like, this is my guy. If I went with the first guy, I would have been a little upset. But I mean, there's got to be a way for us to get our time back from these quotes. And yeah, adding the time that we spent with that homeowner and throwing it into the price is a way to do it. But what if you don't get the job? So I don't know what the solution is to that. And you might have some ideas, but we have to stop wasting our time with customers. And one way I think we can do it is through a few questions on the phone. And I hate scripts. Like, I hate when you call a company and it's some person that knows nothing about the trade and they just start asking you a bunch of questions that's scripted to them, right?
Yeah.
And they can't think beyond the question. If you ask them something else, they can't think beyond that. So I've started to ask customers these questions. And if I get the hint that they're after the best price, I usually don't go. So I'll say, sir, ma'am, thank you for calling. Like, politely, are you looking right now for the best quality install, or are you looking for the best price? And if they hesitate one little bit, I can tell that they're looking for the best price. So in that case, I will say to them, listen, I will show up and I will quote it, but just so you know, I'm not going to give you the cheapest price in the area. I'm not going to do that because I quote my jobs to do them properly. So if you're interested in a job to do it properly, then I will come by and have a look and give you a price. But I'm not going to come by if you're just price hunting, right? And I'll say that up front. And if I lose their business, I'm not really losing their business because I'm not going to get it anyway. But what I'm gaining back is my time to go out there, which could be a 45-minute drive, an hour on site, 45-minute back. So I'm losing 3 hours of my life to get nothing in return, right? So,
absolutely. Yeah, and then, you know, I think what the Nate Adams and the HVAC 2.0 process is similar to that. My understanding is that, you know, you can ask a couple more questions, like, are there parts of your home that are warmer or colder? And is that something that you want to fix with the new system?
Yeah.
And so then, yeah. So you're shifting there, kind of like thinking from, oh, I want the cheapest quote, to, oh, hold on for a second. No one's asked me if there's things in my home that I want to solve with this new system. And so that gets them. So I think, so to go back to what you were saying, yes, it would be practically hard to get every contractor in an area to agree, even if that was possible or legal or anything like that. But I think what the industry should move towards, and that's what Nate was trying to do, is to move towards like just valuing your expertise and charging people for expertise. Gary, like, you don't call, like, you wouldn't call like 3 doctors and say, hey, how much does it cost for hip replacement? Right. And then you wouldn't go with the cheapest quote.
No, I would look for the best hip replacement doctor in my area. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. You would find the best person. You would find the best person. And then, So A, you would go review. B, look at reviews. B, you would go talk to friends and family. C, you would go talk to the doctor themselves. And then you would listen to them and you would listen to see if they actually understand what your problems are. And you kind of want to build a trust with them, right? Like trust is like a miracle. Like trust is a social miracle. How does trust form? Like trust means you're basically forming some beliefs about a person and how they will act in the future. And you really have no basis for forming this, but there's something about how they talk, how they listen to you, how they ask you for what your problems are, and how they like tell you what they're going to do to address your problems, but also give you some kind of like, you know, reasonable expectation. If you went to a hip doctor and they said, oh yeah, I can fix everything, and you'd be playing for the Blue Jays next season, then you wouldn't trust wouldn't form, right? So this, you would have to go on like a value discovery journey with the doctor after having looked at reviews, after having talked to friends and family, and only then would you end up putting your money and your trust and your hips in their hands. I think the HVAC industry should learn from lawyers and doctors, and because, you know, people in the industry, leave alone homeowners, treat HVAC like you are a Walmart and all you're doing is selling boxes at scale. But you are a highly trained, proficient expert on a system that actually has to work within your house as a system. So it's like replacing an HVAC system in your home is like doing an engine swap out on a car, right? Like it's not just like you're hooking a new toaster to an outlet. Your HVAC system has to work with, the new system has to work with the existing ducting, has to work with how many people are in the home, has to work with like how the homeowners like set, temperature set points during the season, in between the day. All these things have to go into designing and factoring into a system. And so your expertise in that space is as technical and as valuable as, I would argue, like, you know, you looking for a doctor, or you looking for a therapist, or you looking for a lawyer. Like there are so many fields in our life that we interact with that we pay people for their expertise. And yet somehow when it comes to HVAC, the industry has locked itself into these dynamics. So one way to do this is through like, you know, what I call policy. Now, several people have told me like policy is a boring word. And, you know, people often think policy just means like government programs, because that's what most people's experience with policy is. But like, you know, a lot of policy is subtle and in the background, and then we sometimes don't even notice it. I'll give you an example, right? And I've listened to your podcast. I've been a longtime fan of your show. So this is kind of like a bucket list item for me, being on here as your guest.
Thank you.
One of my favorite episodes of favorite things that you do on your podcast is when you do these short, like 6 to 10 to 12 minute, like you talking about like your experiences as a business and the things that you would do differently today if you had to go back again. I remember this one episode you were talking about like, you know, setting like how do you write off your own personal vehicle as a business expense or something like mm-hmm. that, right? Like that's a very specific kind of targeted niche advice for businesses. So used to be, man, like 200 years ago, if you were in business, you were a merchant, you put your goods on a ship. If the ship got lost or the goods got stolen or the ship sunk into the sea, like your family and your personal fortune would be liable. You would have to pay your creditors out of your personal fortune. Now, what we did in the 1930s, and actually probably a little earlier than that, is that we said, okay, it is not fair and to have people's personal money, income, and wealth be liable to damages caused by business. And so they created the structure called the corporation, right? So the policies made that happen, is that you can now have a structure called a corporation where you're only liable for what you invest in the corporation, for what the corporation does. And if the business gets lost, or if the goods get lost, or the corporation doesn't live up to its obligations, then the shareholders only lose what they invested in the corporation. And then what happened is the corporation is like, you know, you have to have so many boards of directors, and you have to have annual shareholder meetings, stuff like that. And so as a small business, it was really difficult to enter into this corporate arrangement. So we started creating, this is like fairly new. I believe it's in the, like the 80s when we came up with a concept of like an LLC, right? A limited liability corporation, where you could create an LLC as a business entity that was separate from you as an individual, and you ran a business. And then if the business, you know, ran into some trouble or something like that, the business, your investment in the business went bankrupt, but you, your personal assets and your personal liability bore a limited personal liability for the things that your business did. And what that made happen is that anybody, you and I now, can start a small business. It created new entry points for economic activity, and every small business everywhere in the country can start a small business and offer services to people without worrying that their entire livelihoods are at risk. And so all of these things are what like policy enabled. In your example of being able to write off your car as a business expense, that was enabled by like, you know, tax policy, right? So there's things that we've done that has helped support small businesses, help support people like you and I to start businesses, enter into it, offer services, maintain a reputation without our putting our entire, our home, our cars, our families, fortunes on the line. And what I would like to see is policies to move into the modern age and start offering support to contractors so that they can improve their business practices rather than pour fuel over this race to the bottom dumpster fire, by giving people, homeowners, incentives and rebates that start one day and stop like 3 months later, and putting all the money into that basket, helping businesses where they are, giving them support, helping them grow their business models, helping them try these new ways of offering businesses and services to customers, rather than racing to the bottom. So I have a couple of examples, right? And you tell me what you think. So here's one example. So Gary, let's say I live in Winnipeg, right? And let's say you operate out of Ottawa. I am a small business. Well, you know, I'm a one guy. I have two helpers with me. Maybe I'm, you know, turning over $300,000 a year. You're in a similar boat in Ottawa. Our service areas are completely distinct. Why don't you and I, you know, like meet through some, through some mechanism, and then you and I sit down and we open our books up and say, hey man, what are you doing that is working for you? How is your like consultant model working? How are you able to like go to homeowners and tell them, actually, we need to right size the system this way, otherwise, this thing will not work. How are you able to make that business work? Because I want to move my, I'm tired of like competing on price because these one truck checks are just eating my lunch. I know that I have a lot of value to offer. How have you done this? What can I learn? Can I look at your books? I'll show you my books. Why don't we do that kind of peer-to-peer learning, right? Do you know if things like this exist in our sector?
Not like in a formal fashion, but this happens informally all the time. Like I talk to other contractors candidly about how they're running their business, right? And it gives me ideas on how to better run mine, or they might be doing things similar to the way I do them. They might be doing things differently, and I don't agree with what they're doing. And I'm like, well, I'm glad I don't do things like him, because I see the work that he's doing and what he's charging. Or I talk to people that are doing things better than me, and I'm like, you know what? That's kind of what I want to strive to, is to do things like the way they're doing, right? But I'm in a unique position where I like my commercial service, and I mean I'm one of those guys, pay me for, and I used to have this argument with my old contractor that I work for, is like, pay me for what I know, don't pay me for my time, basically. So if I'm able to do a job in 3 hours, for instance, because I'm knowledgeable and I've brought myself up to speed on the industry and how things work, and it takes someone else the full day to get it done, well, why do I only get paid for 3 hours and they get paid for eight for doing the same job? Right. And I always laid it out like that. So I'm in that boat for service more than I am for install. Like the install projects that I do, I'm only collecting these install projects that I can do properly now. I'm not doing these box swaps for people on last minute, unless it's like a close friend or a family member that needs something and it's in an emergency situation. But as far as the average customer goes, no, I'm my stuff now is methodical. It's planned out. It's going to take time. We're going to do it right, and we're going to charge accordingly. And if we can't do it that way, we're not doing the work at all. And I say we because I don't know why I say we, but I mean, I use other people around me. Like I use a designer that will size things for me. I will talk to the right people at the manufacturer to get the right equipment. So when I say we, I mean a collective within the industry, not employees that I have. So yeah, I'm all for these conversations. I don't think they're happening at a formal level right now. But perhaps that is something that can be developed, right? And people can become members of something like this and figure out how to,
yeah,
because we have this thing called, it used to be College of Trades. Now it's, I can't remember what they named it now, but it does really nothing for us in the long run. We pay a fee and we don't get anything out of, they don't send us how to build a business. They don't send us how to maintain, sustain a business, how to hire. Yep. They don't send us any of that. They don't send us technical bulletins of anything. And I, like, what am I paying for? Just to pay you for what? What am I getting out of it? So why can't we create something that is membership based, that high level contractors and HVAC professionals want to be involved in, and we start spreading information, how to's, documents, all these kinds of things, videos of an install start to finish, how we accomplished it, and the design process, so other contractors can go, and then if we start doing this slowly and more people get involved in doing it the right way, we'll start to build this industry up rather than down, like we're doing with these, like what you call them, Chuck, what do you call it? I call it Chuck in a truck.
One truck Chucks.
You're calling it One Truck Chuck. I call it Chuck in a truck. But anyway, instead of coming down, we go up within the industry, and I think something like that could.
I'm with you 100%. Yeah, the HVAC trades is very special to me in many ways, because it's very unique in the sense that there is so much like content out there that is like happening informally, right? Like there's like plenty of YouTube videos, plenty of like, you know, the podcasts and stuff that you put out. There's a lot of content out there. There's a lot of places where like this kind of like kind of knowledge sharing is happening, but there isn't any kind of like a formal mechanism, like where you learn through play and where you learn through social interactions. Like if you look at any other realm, like if you wanted to pick up a hobby like fly fishing, I just joined Manitoba Fly Fishing Association, and they take you out a couple of times and show you the ropes and how to tie a lure, and like, you know, just like as me, someone who moved here to Canada from a different part of the world, it is very rewarding for me to be in the company of others who've walked this road and have shown me the ropes and take me out and help me develop my own practices, right? That is on the hobby side. But on the business side, there needs to be, you know, I think what one of the ways in which I think our institutions, like you were saying, the College of Trades or whatever, can support HVAC businesses is by recognizing that one big problem that's coming down, breathing down the necks of our industry, is a lot of people are retiring. More people are exiting the industry than are entering, and a lot of them don't have a succession plan, right? A lot of people do not have, their kid is in the business with them. Maybe they're not ready to take on the business. And I've heard you talk about this, Gary. Just because you're a really good technician doesn't mean that you make a good business owner. Those are like two maybe completely different set of skills. And then once you go on and run a business for yourself, it takes a while. You need to take a couple of hits before you really know how to run a business. Some people have the advantage of having almost like kind of being an understudy to a business in their family. But if you're a technician and you're a skilled technician working for a family business, if the family business is, you know, looking to sell the business and retire, you may not be in a position to take on that business. So why don't we do this? One, we leverage the seniors who are exiting the industry and bring them back into the industry as mentors, right? Have them, share their knowledge and not just technical knowledge, but here is what I learned from running a business. Here is how here's the decisions that I made, and here's the thing. And so in the U.S., they have a program called SCORE, which pairs you up with another small business, specifically a trades business in your community. You can be an HVAC guy, and you can get paired up with someone who's been running a plumbing business for a very long time. And so that you can actually, I mean, there is some overlap between how you run like a home trades business, right? So you can learn some of the practices and how they do their thing. So you have at least some, they teach you some ropes. So that is one way to do this, is you bring back the seniors into the sector and have them kind of mentor and train and have these technicians develop some kind of business practices. Now, another thing to do that I'm hearing some people are doing is that every year that you work for a company, a small business actually, especially, what if you were given the option to buy a share of the company? Or what if you were given a percentage of stake in the company, right? So as you spend more and more time in the company, you have more and more skin in the game. So then now you're not like looking to run side jobs. You're not looking to go to someone else who's going to pay you a couple of extra dollars an hour. What you're doing is you're building equity in the company. And then you're slowly on a pathway towards ownership. You're learning about how the business operates. You're learning about, what the payroll looks like, what admin looks like and stuff like that. And then when the owner is retiring, you are better equipped to make a decision about whether or not you want to buy the company so that you can be a business owner, or whether you want to then sell your stake in the company and then just go be a tech somewhere else, because if that's what you want to do, right? And there are ways in which, from a policy perspective, we can encourage things like this. I think they're called employee shared ownership plans, ESOPs. And in some provinces, the province that I live in Manitoba, you get a tax credit for having employee shared owners. So the money that you earn from your shares in the company that you work for is not taxed, or taxed at a less degree or something like that. So what that means is that we are encouraging a business transition. We are encouraging like continual lineage in the business. So that way, when you're ready to retire, some large company doesn't swoop up, take up your business, and then fire all the good tax, and then just run your business and your legacy to the ground.
Yeah,
I think these are ways. I mean, these are just. So, what do you think of that?
Every single person that I've talked to that's started up a technology business, yeah. And this seems to be that's something that happens in technology businesses is that they bring on board, because a lot of these startups, they got no money, so they can't pay people right off the hop. So they're like, okay, I will offer you mm-hmm. a stake in my company. We're going to grow this thing. And when we sell it, you are going to cash out. So it's a fabulous idea to make sure that every apprentice, dispatcher, accounts receivable, accounts payable, everybody that's involved in the company is able to get when they get hired, they get a portion of the company. They got to be there for so long before they get it and all that kind of stuff to make sure that they're actually going to commit. But once they know that every single decision they make in the day is going to make or break that company. But if you're part owner of that company, every decision you make, you're going to want to make sure that company is growing and successful, because the one, like you said, the company could get sold one day, and if it gets sold and you've taken your share of X to X times 10 or X times 15 and the company sells, well, you've worked towards something now. Right. And I think that is a way to get everybody on board. And like you said, it will prevent the side jobs from happening, because if you're getting at the end of the year, if you own a portion of the company, you're getting a check of dividends for, let's say, $10,000 because the company, well, then there's the three or four side jobs that you might do, that there's your money right there. And you don't have to go out on weekends and do this for cash and do a crappy job because you're trying to undercut someone else to get it, to provide for your family. I get all these things, right? So it's a really good way for everybody to be on the same page and work towards an end goal, right? And I really like that idea.
Absolutely. And then what if we then did this? For people who have, so in Canada, we have this thing called the Red Seal. So your American listeners, what would you say? A Red Seal is like your license, your ticket, right?
Yeah, Red Seal basically is like an interprovincial license. So once you get it, you're able to, now I haven't tried this physically myself, and there could be some rules and regulations that I don't know about in other provinces, but the way Red Seal's explained to me is your interprovincial license, I can move from Ontario to BC and practice the trade in BC without having to rewrite anything like that. So that's the way I understand
it. Exactly. Yeah, that's like the gold standard for like a ticket, right? So what if we did this? So, you know, even putting the Red Seal aside, so for journeymen, journey persons, what if we said, if you're a journeyman working in a company, you can take like courses at a local community college, evening classes for free that'll tell you, that'll teach you business skills. So just basic, like how do you develop a business plan? How do you run payroll? How do you do marketing? How do you hire people? How do you, how do you do employee, like performance evaluations, like all the admin, like all the things that like technicians, kind of like take for granted before they start their own business, and they have to learn through the school of hard knocks, right? What if you just like give them just a little bit of intro into these things? And I know there are some provinces here in Canada, what they have is they're starting this new thing called the Blue Seal. The idea is that for people who have the technical skills, who are journeymen, you give them free community college courses so that at the end of which, you take like, I don't know, like 30 hours, 40 hours of these courses. So now you then get like a blue seal that goes along with your red seal. So then it shows that when you're going to another employer or you're going to a bank to try to get a loan, it demonstrates that you have had some at least basic background training in how to run a business. Wouldn't that be nice if we had policies that would encourage skilled tradespeople and met them where they're at, gave them like maybe virtual online classes or maybe put them in the evening community college, maybe even paid them for their time to go and learn these skills so that we continue to have like small business leadership so that we can turn our extremely highly skilled technical workforce into highly successful business people?
Yeah. No, I mean, it's... These are all great ideas, and how do we start? I mean, someone's got to start somewhere, and I think this is probably one of the missions that you're on right now, Abby, is to try to get stuff like this done. So there's people listening to this, and they're like, who the hell is this guy talking to me anyway? So to end this off, just quickly tell us who you are and who you're working with, and then we'll get going on this one. But I think this was a really good conversation. But tell us who you are, Abby.
Thanks, Gary. I am a number one fan of your show. And I am a research manager at Efficiency Canada, which is like a kind of like a think tank, a research institute at Carleton University in Ottawa, which is in the capital of Canada. And I live in Winnipeg. And so my background is I'm an electrical engineer. And I'm an, for the lack of a better term, I will say I'm an academic, right? I'm a researcher, and I'm really interested and curious about what the role of policy is in really supporting HVAC businesses where they're at. And oftentimes, and this is not to knock on other, there's a lot of good researchers out there, but oftentimes what happens is research kind of happens in a vacuum, and people look at policies that are working in other places in the world, and then try to make policy recommendations on what the government of Canada should be doing to encourage business. And a lot of, the policies that governments come up with end up being kind of like this kind of incentive-based programs, and that I don't think reflect the ground realities of how complicated the business landscape is and how like really just kind of Wild West kind of like that kind of undercutting thing happens in the HVAC industry. So my approach as a researcher has been, and I'm not a HVAC technician, but I go on a lot of ride-alongs with contractors. I listen to podcasts, and I spend a lot of time with contractors, talking to contractors, being around them so that I can develop like an instinct almost for how contractors think, what their businesses are like, what their business models are like, how the conversation happens at the kitchen table between the contractor and the homeowners, and trying to understand the dynamics of that. And then trying to make these kind of suggestions and policy recommendations to governments and our institutions to develop supports that will meet contractors where they're at and give them the tools and the resources that they need to help support a thriving HVAC sector. Because I think that's in the public interest. And I think a strong, independent, thriving HVAC sector in Canada and in the U.S. is an asset for Canada and the U.S. because, you know, like things like used to be that, you know, for people who choose not to go to post-secondary school, manufacturing or forestry or mining used to be a pathway towards like a middle-class life. And a lot of those pathways are getting narrower and narrower and due to these complicated things like automation, things like that. So the HVAC sector, I think, is ideally positioned to offer a large parts of our countries and for a lot of our men and women and friends and neighbors and family, a pathway towards a successful life and policies that will help help HVAC businesses thrive and create that economic opportunity is good, not just for our fellow Canadians and Americans, but it's also good for Canada and in the U.S. because we seem to have very ambitious climate goals. We seem to have very ambitious housing goals. We seem to have very ambitious workforce goals. And for us to get to those goals, we need a thriving, a robust HVAC sector that opens up economic opportunity for our fellow Canadians and Americans. And in doing so, solves problems and helps people live in more comfortable and better homes. So the goal of my research project, broadly speaking, is to spend as much time as I can to learn as much as I can from HVAC contractors and come up with these ideas that I can share with HVAC contractors, have them be vetted and prioritized and selected by HVAC contractors and bubble them up to whoever is willing to listen to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, I appreciate you getting on here today and having this discussion with me because there is a lot of things in our industry we need to fix. And it starts with teaching the professionals from a grassroots level the way we do things properly. And I think that's another point that we could, another rabbit hole we could open is from a from the standpoint of schooling and technical and trade mm-hmm. colleges. We teach people this right from the beginning, and we also implement business courses into these technical business or technical trainings as well, like trade college. Let's have a section of that where it's not just how to pull a vacuum or how to braze, but okay, if you want to own your own business, here's a structured way that you can do it. And here's the way that we want to do it. So we're asking the customers the right questions and we're building towards a goal that we're all striving together for. And I think if we start that in trade schools, that will help when these people are licensed and starting their own business, that will help them to transition into running the business properly. If we start at a grassroots level, all of these things are some good ideas. And like you said, you're part of a think tank, and we just got to take all these ideas and put them into something that everybody can sort of take from and learn from without being sort of all jumbled everywhere. So hopefully this can happen in some point in the next few years. But Abby, thank you very much for your time today.
Oh, thanks for having me, Gary. And I will agree with you. And I'll just add one last thing to this to say that, yes, we can start. We should start at the grassroots level, but and then build on that to offer continual support for businesses at every stage of their journey, right? Like, so here's a little grant. Why don't you go learn how to use ServiceTitan in your company? Let's do this. Why don't we make it when you sell a home, you have to disclose what your energy bills over the last 12 months. All these things will add value to the day-to-day life jobs that HVAC contractors are doing. So all of a sudden then, what you install in your home matters to you as a homeowner. Therefore, it matters to the contractor. And that's how I think we make the change. And so thank you for bringing me on and willing to, you know, talk to me and do give it this another shot, given our technical difficulties the first time, man. I'm very grateful for you. And this has been like a dream come true for me to get on your podcast.
Thanks, Abby.
Hope you enjoyed the show. Follow HVAC Know-It-All on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, TikTok, Twitter, LinkedIn, and anywhere else Gary feels like popping up. This has been a Two Smokes and a Coffee production.